States of America versus Tang. And Ms. Landau, I'll hear from you.
May it please the court. The issue before the court concerns three conditions of supervised release imposed upon Mr. Tang following his conviction for failure to register as a sex offender in violation of 18 United States Code 2250A. Mr. Tang argues that the district court abused its discretion in imposing these three conditions, which one, prohibited him from subscribing to any computer online service or accessing any internet service unless approved in advance in writing by the probation office. Two, requiring Mr. Tang to participate in mental health treatment, possibly including sex offender mental health treatment program with possible physiological testing, as well as a waiver of confidentiality with all mental health treatment. And third, prohibiting Mr. Tang from associating with minors up to and including his own children, as well as dating adults who have children regardless of whether those children were present without express permission from the probation office. It may be useful.
Is there any evidence here that he has any children?
There is.
18?
There is a, sorry, Your Honor. There is a reference in the motion to waive PSR to a one child who is still alive.
How old is the child?
I believe she is 15. It may be useful for the court to understand the context in which these supervised release conditions were imposed. Mr. Tang had waived preparation of the pre-sentence report. He had already been sentenced, and it was only once the six-month split sentence had been imposed that this lengthy list, it takes up a whole page of small type, this list of conditions was read aloud for the first time. And counsel for Mr. Tang, furiously trying to both understand this rather complex and at times vague list of conditions and scrambling to formulate objections to those conditions, it was clear that nobody really understood what these conditions were, how they would operate, and whether indeed they were even necessary in Mr. Tang's case, which is a bit of an unusual presentation, as the district court noted, in giving him the sentence that the court did.
But they were orally announced at sentencing?
For the most part, yes, Your Honor. There are a couple items mentioned in my brief that were not announced at sentencing, where...
About his girlfriend, I mean, about...
The dating.
Potential girlfriend, dating.
Yes, the dating condition was not pronounced at sentencing. There was also a discrepancy between who would be financially responsible for the sex offender treatment program costs.
But as regards to those appellate points that you've brought up, those were announced at sentencing?
Well, almost entirely, Your Honor. The two things I just mentioned I did bring up in my initial brief on appeal. But other than that, yes, the list of conditions were pronounced at sentencing. And a rather lengthy colloquy ensued about objections to those provisions, including the sex offender treatment component of the mental health treatment, the restriction on computer use, as well as the breadth of the association restriction.
Ms. Landau, there's an issue here as to what is the proper standard of review because of the objections being so general, or maybe even no objections whatsoever. If you would comment on that.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think it's helpful to look at what the district court understood in addition to the actual content of the objection. For example, with respect to the computer ban, at page 54 of the transcript, there's sort of a back and forth between defense counsel and the court, and the district court is having difficulty understanding the objection, and the court says, "You're objecting to him having to get advance approval in writing?" And counsel says, "Yes." And that essentially is the nature of our issue here.
Okay. But there's another problem with these. A lot of these have this hook that says, without prior approval of the probation officer, which seems to ameliorate a lot of the problems in these points. At no time was that objection made, or was it?
Actually, Your Honor, the at least with respect to the internet ban, the district court specifically indicated that the prior approval was being objected to.
Did you object to it?
Yes.
Now, not what the judge said. Did you object to it?
Yes.
Okay.
Page 50.
So are you saying then all of these should be abuse of discretion instead of plain error?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that given both what was the nature of the objection and what the district court brought up on its own, review should be for abuse of discretion. Now, I admit there was not a constitutional objection made, which I did include in my brief as an issue, but honestly, that's just another way to view the same issue. And if the court doesn't want to engage in the constitutional analysis, it need not do so. And that was not presented to the district court because on your feet under those circumstances, it's rather difficult to make a lengthy 20-page argument that would encompass all of the issues. But it's fair to say that the district court was on notice that these conditions were problematic and what the nature of the problem was. Now, to respond to Your Honor's question about the hook in terms of the prior approval, that assumes that the condition is proper in the first place. 18 United States Code Section 3583 D1 and 2 does permit the court to impose special conditions of supervised release, but they have to be reasonably related to the relevant 3553A factors. And additionally, the conditions must involve no greater deprivation of liberty than is reasonably necessary to fulfill those goals.
One of the problems with this is that we're, and I don't know if it was in the briefs or wherever, but many of these could be premature arguments. That is to say, we do not know what the probation officer is going to do. Now, as I guess you're objecting to it per se.
In this case, per se, Your Honor. Not to say that they could never be imposed, but that in this case, there is no nexus, at least with respect to the computer ban, there's no nexus between the offense and the 3553A factors and the condition. There's no indication that Mr. Tang ever used the internet to commit any offense.
And do you have to have that connection, or do you have to have the connection of the factors? That is to say, the protection of the public or children and these 3553A1, A2B, A2C, and A2D.
Well, Your Honor, there has to be some connection other than a general concern for protecting the public. Otherwise, we'd impose it in nearly every case. There has to be some indication that he used the internet at some point to commit an offense, not just that others have. It has to be that he did.
He is currently on supervised release.
He is, Your Honor.
What has happened to some of these conditions? Do we know? Does the record say?
It's outside the record, but I do have some information if the court would like to hear outside of the record information. He told me that he has been sent to sex offender treatment. A lot of these things have come to pass already. He doesn't have the internet in his home. There are other cases, and I think perhaps that's what Judge Garza was referring to, where these conditions are unripe. And this is not that case because he doesn't have a 10-year prison term in front of him. He's already experiencing these conditions.
Now, the way I would read 3553, though, is that A really influences everything else, that you must first consider the nature, circumstances of the offense, and the history and characteristics of the defendant. And then once you do that, then you look to the need to afford deterrence to his conduct, the interests of the public, and his treatment.
That makes sense, Your Honor.
I mean, otherwise, A informs everything else, is all.
I would agree, Your Honor. That makes sense as a reading of it. Otherwise, deterrence, generalized deterrence, would control everything. You do have to look at this person's history. And it's worth noting that he has, before failing to register, he has just this one Iowa aggravated misdemeanor conviction. There's not a pattern here. And if anything, the circumstances underlying that prior offense indicate something of an aberrant behavior situation rather than somebody who needs a great deal of very onerous deterrent special conditions imposed upon supervised release. And it also, without looking at this case in particular and just imposing these generalized conditions, the conditions become something that are punitive. And supervised release conditions are not supposed to be punitive. In fact, the 3553A factors that the sentencing court is to consider expressly do not include punishment or respect for the law. And if you have somebody's entire life being conditioned on the discretion of the probation officer when that is really not needed in the case, it really becomes something that is speculative and punitive, and that would constitute an abuse of discretion. And I'm not sure I was clear about my point with respect to the internet ban. It's not enough that it's not a complete and total ban forever and that he can get permission to access the internet. It's that it's very onerous to do so, and that without showing that it's reasonably necessary in this case, the court has no business regulating his internet use in the first place. To say that the permission saves it assumes that internet regulation is proper at all. And I would argue that no internet regulation should have been imposed in this case, given the facts.
Let me ask you about, you complained that the confidentiality waiver regarding his mental health treatment was unreasonable. And it seems to me, isn't the court entitled to know? Let's suppose there had been a revocation hearing or some issue. Shouldn't the court be allowed to find out the progress in mental health treatment or sex, assuming that sex offender treatment was appropriate?
I think assuming the sex offender treatment is appropriate, that would be a reasonable condition. But I think it's worth noting that 3553A factors expressly require that the treatment be set forth in the most effective manner. And in this case, the district court wasn't concerned about him needing sex offender treatment. The district court was concerned about him getting help for his depression, which is a legitimate concern that is borne out.
Why do you object to the confidentiality?
Because it interferes with the treatment for his depression, which is a serious and very real problem for him. If he is not able to trust his therapist because his secrets are going to be revealed to his probation officer in the court, he's not going to have the kind of therapy he needs to avoid very serious depression that got him in trouble in the first place. And there's no indication that that's needed here. It's garden variety depression. There's nothing that the court would need to know about other than that he's attending.
How do we know it's garden variety?
There's no indication to the contrary. He was treated. He was treated.
I thought the court said, indicated that they were not sure whether or not the psychological treatment or the sex offender treatment was, you know, that they have to go in there and try to ascertain. But he was allowing both of those to have a complete treatment of the individual.
Well, it wasn't clear which would be required. That's true, Your Honor. I think that's actually somewhat problematic given the intrusiveness of the sex.
See, that's again another premature, you know, we don't know which, you know, whether the depression is the only cause or whether this, you know, the sexual whatever is the only cause, or both of them are together causing this.
But, Your Honor, the district court misunderstood its discretion to impose only mental health treatment. The district court seemed to believe that the only way to get him treatment for his depression was to include this rather onerous sex offender treatment possibility with physiological testing and all the rest.
I thought that was to be determined by the mental health treater.
Yes, Your Honor. It is to be determined by the mental health treater, but the condition for the sex offender treatment and all of that isn't necessary if all the district court wants is to get him treatment for his depression, which is what the district court indicated. The district court said that he can't have it both ways. He cannot have mental health treatment without being treated as a sex offender. And that's simply not accurate. There is a straight mental health treatment provision in the guidelines that the court routinely imposes. And in order to get treatment for his depression, he should not also be subject to possible sex offender treatment. And he, as I mentioned to Judge Owen, that's already happened. It's not speculative. But the burden, we shouldn't have to go back to court and the burden be on us to show why he shouldn't have to do this when the district court didn't even necessarily want him to engage in sex offender treatment. All the
district light is about as red as it's going to get.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That light is about as red as it's going
to
get.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Now, Ms. Offenhaus.
May it please the court. Am I speaking loud enough? I tend to kind of go down, so I'm trying to listen to your instructions. I think where I'd like to start is just simply that Section 3583 defines the limit of the district court's discretion in imposing a term of supervised release. And as the courts noted, that the court must take into consideration the 3563B factors, which are the discretionary conditions.
How is the internet related either to his failure to register as a sex offender or his prior offense?
How is it related to the
use of the internet?
Addressing it as a factual question, there isn't any evidence in the record that he used the internet. His prior offense was committed in Iowa, which of course was a sexual abuse of a child under the age of 13 offense.
He was intoxicated and had her in a car.
Yes. I mean, well, he's saying that it was improper sexual contact. It was a sexual contact offense. I mean, that was what was in the amended trial information.
After his young child had died of...
After, yes. And he was his, what the...
Why, Judge Owens asked you, why is the internet an appropriate condition of the sentence here?
I think the best answer is it comes down to the district courts, the 3583D factor of protecting the public. What he has is he has a prior sexual assault or sexual abuse offense.
He was 8 years old at the time that he failed to register under SORNA.
Yes, that is true. But the circumstances that he alleged in his
I take it from your answer that you have no argument to support that the internet is really relevant to his sentence.
I think it is relevant to his condition and the prior offense that he committed. That because it is how? Because the internet is a widespread. It has social networks. It has contacts, and the question is there proof in here that he had interaction with children?
There could have been the PSR. Those people have broad investigative authority, and did he?
They waived the PSR in this case, so we don't have.
Well, I'm just saying they have that authority. Whether they did it, they waived the PSR, as I understand it, but they have the authority to go back and look at his history and. Any evidence that he ever abused the internet or used it to seek out child victims or children or pornography or
there is nothing in this record that establishes that.
Miss, better move on to one that you have a winner for.
Well, before we do that, it seems to me that the condition has to be reasonably related to the factors. 3553A and so on. I mean, we know that. But what's your argument that it's reasonably related, that the internet is that prohibition is reasonably related to this particular crime? to... Or the background crime, for
the background of the crime. What the... If you look at... And actually, if you go back and you look at the conditions that are in, the special conditions that are in the written judgment and that were pronounced at sentencing, is that, you know, the one that immediately precedes, well, the two that immediately precede that condition are, number one, that he shall not have contact with children under the age of 18 without advance approval in writing by the probation officer. The second one, and this one the court actually limited to children, defendant shall not view, possess, or have under his control any nude depictions of children, sexually oriented or sexually stimulating material, including visual, auditory, telephonic, electronic media, computer programs.
That can all be enforced and still have internet access, can't it?
Well, the district court did not, and if you, and this is in the colloquy between the district judge and defense counsel and the probation officer. The district court did not intend that it did not do a complete bar or a complete ban on all internet communication, I guess, or internet use or internet access. What the court did was to specify that, number one, everybody will use the internet. You have to, it would be ridiculous to say that you can't use a computer.
Well, that's what this says. He's barred from having the software unless it's approved in advance by the probation officer. He can't have, he can't have the software.
Well, software, internet connecting software, like, for example, a P2P program, like LimeWare or something that there you can share files, or you can't, I mean, there are certain things. There are chat room internet connections. So this is not a limitation, as I understand it, on his ability to go on the internet and you know.
Can he own one?
Can he own a computer? There's no.
I mean,
there's,
can he subscribe to the internet?
With approval.
With approval, because he shall not access any internet service.
And then it comes
without
down.
Without approval of the probation officer.
It comes down to, in my mind, it comes down to what the court held in Miller, and that is this: the district court assumed, and this court assumes that the probation officer will exercise reasonable professional judgment in determining the circumstances.
I think I wrote Miller, and the facts are a little different.
The facts are a little different, but the same concept or the same principle applies. What you have is a probation officer who is implementing.
But that's not the point. Seems to me. I mean, the point is whether the condition itself, as Judge Garza has pointed out, is reasonably related to the offense. It's not whether the probation officer is going to be reasonable in administering a condition that is not relevant to the offense. That's not the point.
Is
it relevant?
Are you saying that well, I guess I'm asking a question now. Are you saying that reasonably related to the offense of failing to register, or because the reason why he failed, but what the reason for SORNA is that the registration requirement for putting in the I guess the FBI
I'm saying
network.
Either. I'm saying either. Either one.
But it's reasonably related to the predicate offense leading to the SORNA violation, and that is that he committed a sexual abuse of a crime offense against a 13-year-old. The fact that it's...
He didn't use the internet in any kind of way.
No, but the question is that...
It's not even connected with the offense. Kind of offense. So anyway,
then the question is whether it's reasonably related to
it's you know, we've had many of the internet exchange of pornography in the court, and I could see how all of this could definitely be reasonably related. Okay, But there seems to be a leap here between that type of conduct and the conduct that was exhibited in the underlying offense in Iowa. And then the question is, although there is contact of abuse of a minor female, okay, I have not heard from you yet why these two broad categories of crimes can be assisted by this internet prohibition per se. I understand your blog and the exchange of information, all that, and that all is appropriate for, you know, these other people. But how is it appropriate here?
Well,
and see, one of the problems here is that this is abuse of discretion.
Right.
And then that's another area.
The deferential abuse of discretion. My response goes to what one of the things that you brought up, and that is that when you're looking at this court saying, analyzing a special condition of supervised release under the 3553 factors, does it comply with these factors? The 3553A1, A2 factors. Does it comply with the Sentencing Commission's policy statements? Is it a discretionary condition under 3563A? And it would have to fall under the catch-all provision for that one. But the question is that. How it's being implemented through the probation officer by the district judge is a question of that could be raised under the 3553E factor of requesting a modification.
Well,
that's pretty much all I can say.
Okay.
You know,
what about the restriction on access to his own children?
One of the footnotes in my brief is not technically correct, and I realized it when I was preparing for the argument, because it was in that he does have a second child. But what's also in that sentencing document filed by Tang is that he is divorced and his wife lives in Iowa. Now, whether he is having direct contact with the child, I mean, it's just simply the record doesn't disclose.
Well, he's forbidden to under the terms of the order.
Without prior permission of the probation officer. So it's not necessarily, it's an absolute ban, but it is a flexible, it's basically a flexible association monitoring restriction that you will notify the probation officer or inform the probation officer of these conditions, and then the probation officer who is implementing the district court's order will reasonably act in a professional, reasonable manner in determining what's appropriate for the case.
What about the mental and physiological treatment? What do you have to say about that?
Well, those, both the mental and physiological treatment are both conditions under the special condition, are discretionary conditions under the statute, and they are also sentencing commission policy statements under 5D1.3. The question of probably
outside the record, but who made the decision that he does need sex offender treatment?
Initially, if I may say outside the record, it was in the Iowa judgment. Now, whether the Iowa judgment is before was considered by the district court.
For 8 years, he's had sex offender treatment?
Yes. When he committed the offense in Iowa, one of the conditions of his probation was that he submit to sex offender treatment or participate in a sex offender program. I don't recall. Actually, I can tell you how it's worded. But this is, of course, is outside the record, and whether the district court had that before, considered it, I simply can't say.
It seems to me that this whole thing really depends on whether this guy is really whether his problem is sexual or his problem is depression, which is could be totally different, and it could hinge together. I'm not sure.
No.
We don't have anything here. And I thought the court said when the objection came up and says we don't know that yet. That is to say, we don't know whether it's depression or whether this is.
My understanding how it works is that once the defendant is placed on supervised release, the probation officer, the court has directed the probation officer I hope I'm not incorrect in calling it this, but it's like a risk assessment evaluation, not to be made by the probation officer, but to subject him or to have him evaluated by the mental health, the treatment provider, the mental health provider and the treatment provider or the sex offender provider, treatment provider may be the same. It is it starts off with initial risk assessment evaluation made by the treatment provider to determine what treatment actually the defendant needs for purpose of rehabilitation. Then at that point, when you're talking about are they separate? His statement to the district judge, or his sentencing recommendation was that the reason why I committed the Iowa sex abuse offense was because of my depression and I spiraled out of control. And at sentencing, he's telling the district court he is taking depression medication. So, the district court, is it unreasonable for the district court to assess this as together? That this was the reason for your depression? That it's part and parcel of the same.
Okay.
Hopefully, if I've answered questions.
No, you.
But I want to make one point I would like to make is on the waiver of confidentiality. Actually, the purpose of that waiver, as Judge Owen noted, it's therapeutic, and it is to ensure the efficacy of the treatment that the defendant will actually get. And if as written in the judgment and pronounced by the district judge at sentencing, is that it was a very limited waiver. I am authorizing the probation department to obtain the evaluations from the treatment provider and make an assessment as to your progress. If the treatment provider requests information in the probation officer's possession, the district court authorized the probation officer to release that to the treatment provider for purpose of progression, I guess, progressing his rehabilitation.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Offenhauser. We'll hear from Ms. Landau, who has a few minutes for rebuttal.
First, I just want to clarify what offense he actually was convicted of in Iowa. It wasn't sexual assault of a minor. It was actually an aggravated misdemeanor of assault with intent to commit sexual abuse. I think
it was a misdemeanor?
Aggravated misdemeanor, Your Honor, yes.
But it would be a felony under the guidelines.
I believe that is also correct. He did not receive a prison term for that offense, though, which I think is important in assessing the court's view of his behavior. I think with respect to the internet, Judge Owen brought up an interesting point, which was that the Iowa offense was committed using a car. It would make more sense to ban Mr. Tang from using a car, which was actually used in the underlying offense, than it would to ban him from using the internet.
It's not the location that necessarily gives rise to the crime, but what's in one's mind.
Of course, Your Honor.
And so I'm not sure that analogy fits.
At least the car was used in the offense. The internet was not.
Oh, and again, it's just
there has to be some kind of demonstrated connection between the offense, not just the propensity of others, but the offense itself, Mr. Tang's characteristics themselves, and the conditions that are imposed. Lacking that nexus, the condition should not be imposed, and to do so would be an abuse of discretion.
What's the evidence about why he gave false addresses?
I believe, Your Honor, that he gave an address that he intended to move into. That was the finding of the district court. He wound up not moving into that address. That was an address that his girlfriend had used to obtain a cell phone. But I don't think there was a deliberate intent to mislead, because he came back 3 times. I think he was effectively homeless at that time, did not have a fixed place of residence. English is also not his first language, and I'm not sure he understood he could say, I don't have a fixed address. That part is outside the record, but in speaking to him, he does have some comprehension issues with English sometimes and directions. But I think what makes this case unusual is that he did try and register 3 times. He did undergo sex offender treatment in Iowa. There's no indication he was anything but successful in that. So there's no indication in favor of imposing the condition. If we don't know whether the condition is needed or not, you can't put the onus on Mr. Tang to demonstrate that he doesn't need it and force him to undergo sex offender treatment until he moves to modify the conditions of supervised release. That's the wrong way of going about it. We have to look at whether the district court abused its discretion, because there was insufficient information to indicate that such treatment was necessary in the first place. And if the district court misunderstood its discretion to impose plain mental health treatment without the intrusiveness of the sex offender treatment, that alone is an abuse of discretion and would warrant remand in this case. I have no way of verifying or commenting on whether the waiver of confidentiality is indeed a very limited waiver, but I certainly would think that a person would have difficulty confiding their most intimate thoughts and feelings with somebody who was required to give any piece of that information other than attendance to the United States probation officer for possible use in revocation hearings. I would be very guarded about anything I said to that treatment provider, which would impede my ability to get the treatment that I needed. And I think really in the end, him getting effective treatment is key to him never reoffending. As Judge Owen remarked, this was after a tragic loss, the loss of his daughter, and he began, unfortunately, abusing alcohol, and the offense was committed under those circumstances. I think if the court is unclear about the need for these conditions, particularly the mental health treatment, the court has the option of remanding for clarification and findings if the court is not comfortable with vacating the condition outright. So that's also an option that the court has to consider. Unless the court has further questions, I would ask that the conditions be vacated, or in the alternative, that the case be remanded for clarification and further findings.
Thank you, Ms. Landau.
Thank you.